Radio Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Governor Kathy Hochul says she might deploy the National Guard as wildcat strikes hit 25 New York prisons. Corrections officers refuse to show up for work to protest what they say are hazardous conditions and severe staff shortages. Patricio Rubio was on the picket line with workers from the Woodburn Correctional Facility yesterday, and he spoke to the striking workers. We'll bring you that conversation. Former New York State Senator Mike Martucci takes on a new role as Region 2 Administrator for the EPA. We'll hear from him. Filmmaker Werner Herzog's Theater of Thought explores the mysterious brain and features local performer and neuroscientist Joseph Ledoux. He's here. Plus, we'll meet singer-songwriter Kate Preischer. It's all coming up. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Russia says Washington and Moscow are on their way toward normalizing relations. That follows yesterday's talks in Saudi Arabia. It was the first direct high-level exchange between the two countries since Russia invaded Ukraine nearly 3 years ago. NPR's Charles Maines reports the talks mark an abrupt shift in U.S. policy.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, briefing Russian lawmakers on the Saudi talks, praised President Trump as the first Western leader to publicly acknowledge the prospect of NATO expansion into Ukraine as a major cause of the war. Lavrov said there was now a shared desire not only to end that conflict, but possibly work with the U.S. to develop new trade and geopolitical partnerships. To do that, Lavrov said both sides first had to, quote, clean up Biden administration efforts to undermine relations. The Biden White House sought to isolate Russia over its invasion of its neighbor. In contrast, President Trump has said he wants to work with Russia to end the war, unnerving Ukraine and traditional U.S. allies in Europe. Charles Maines, NPR News.
Frigid temperatures are blanketing the central U.S. National Weather Service meteorologist Andrew Orison says millions of people are under extreme cold warnings.
We have temperatures up across the Northern Plains region that are on the order of minus 30 to minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So the Dakotas, parts of Montana, on down into Nebraska, but it's very cold all the way south down into Texas. Some parts of Texas, especially northern Texas, the temperatures are in the single digits, and there's actually a few sub-zero temperatures there.
There are also winter storm warnings in several Appalachian states. Stocks opened lower this morning as the Commerce Department reported a sharper-than-expected drop in home construction last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell about 140 points in early trading.
It's hard to break ground on new houses when much of the ground is frozen. Housing starts fell nearly 10% last month as frigid winter weather blanketed much of the country. Permits for future home construction tell a somewhat warmer story. They showed little change from December. President Trump's pick to run the Commerce Department has won Senate confirmation on a narrow party line vote, as Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick will oversee a sprawling department that includes the National Weather Service and the Census Bureau, which counts things like housing starts. The former Wall Street executive will also enforce the president's trade agenda, including tariffs. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
President Trump's choice to be labor secretary will appear this morning for her confirmation hearing. Former Oregon Congresswoman Lori Chavez de Remer drew strong labor support while in office. Her nomination has been praised by the head of the Teamsters Union. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials are now down 150 points. You're listening to NPR. Demonstrators gathered at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention headquarters in Atlanta yesterday. Georgia Public Broadcasting's Sophie Gratas reports they were protesting the firing of thousands of workers in federal health agencies.
The CDC has lost about 10% of its workforce, more than 1,000 people, since termination letters went out across the Department of Health and Human Services last week. Barbara Stanky, retired from state public health, says that the cuts will leave frontline workers without critical guidance.
The CDC is sponsoring that. You know, they're the ones who coordinate that. It takes a lot. It takes a lot to get from federal to state to local, to the people and communities.
And those communities need good information, she says, to fight infectious and chronic diseases. For NPR News, I'm Sophie Gradas in Atlanta.
The Vatican says Pope Francis continues to rest in a Rome hospital. He's now been diagnosed with a severe case of pneumonia. The Pope was initially hospitalized last week for the treatment of bronchitis. Pakistani officials have increased the number of arrests of Afghan citizens who are in Pakistan's capital, Islamabad. More arrests have been reported in a nearby city. The Afghan embassy in Islamabad claims that Pakistan is trying to expel all Afghan refugees from the country. Pakistan denies this, but Pakistani leaders have previously vowed to eject Afghan nationals. The Associated Press reports more than a million Afghans are now living in Pakistan after they fled the Taliban takeover of their country. Many are seeking resettlement in the U.S. It's NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their premium travel card, Venture X. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us this morning. On Tuesday, Governor Kathy Hochul warned she might deploy the National Guard to secure New York's prisons after wildcat strikes by corrections officers spread to over half of the state's 42 facilities. The strikes, which began on Monday, saw officers at two upstate prisons refuse to report for duty in protest of staffing shortages and other conditions. By Tuesday, the strikes had expanded to 25 prisons, according to state officials, including one here in Sullivan County. Patricio Rubio spoke to striking workers from the Woodburn Correctional Facility yesterday.
Enough is enough!
Just a few miles away from the Woodburn Correctional Facility, the voices of the correctional officers and workers ring loud and clear. They say they had enough of the dangerous working conditions, mandatory overtime, and a state administration that they believe is ignoring their pleas. Workers are taking a stand despite the risks.
The Department of Corrections, the officers have had enough of the state's not caring and decided to go on strike even though it's against the law for law enforcement.
That's David Cornish, a retired correctional sergeant who stood in solidarity at the protest. He says their biggest concern isn't exhaustion, it's safety. Over the past 2 weeks, at least 8 officers have fallen ill inside the facility, some experiencing seizures.
The violence on staff has gotten worse. One of the big things that a lot of the staff here have had is they've been getting exposed to an unknown chemical within the jail and throughout the state. And what's been happening is there's a couple of officers who've been passed out, convulsions.
What's causing these sudden illnesses? Workers believe that the inmates are using and smuggling synthetic drugs into the facility, possibly through the mail system. But the state response, denial.
Guy passed out, split his face open. So there's something in there that the inmates have, some kind of chemical that they're smoking or doing something. We're not sure what it is. And the state of New York's, their response is that it's just we're tired. That staff is just tired. That's the reason that there's nothing going on. Last night there was, I think, 10 officers had to go to the hospital last night. And again, the state of New York just doesn't care.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul has responded via a written press release calling the job action illegal. Her office has ordered the National Guard to be mobilized to step in if necessary. In a statement, Governor Kathy Hochul says, "We will not allow these individuals to jeopardize the safety of their colleagues, incarcerated people, and the surrounding communities." The governor insists that she has taken steps to improve officer conditions, raising salaries, increasing hazard pay, and tightening security measures to reduce contraband. But for those officers, it's not enough. Meanwhile, the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision is taking a hard stance. Spokesperson Thomas Maley issued a statement to Radio Catskill saying that the illegal job actions are putting officers, inmates, and facilities at risk. The number of participating jails has grown to 25, causing visitation cancellations across multiple locations. Maley says The striking correction officers have made demands that will require changing laws and violating their own collective bargaining agreement. Among those demands, the reversal of the HALT Act, an end to staffing reductions and pay raises. The HALT Act, or the Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act, limits the use of segregated confinement in New York jails and prisons. As tensions rise, the state is moving fast with the National Guard on standby and the Taylor Law looming, which prohibits public workers from striking. These officers face serious consequences.
This is the final option. And for a lot of these people, you know, the financial expense is every day they're going to miss. They're going to get docked 2 days. So this is going to be tough on people's families. Tough. This is a tough decision for the Department of Corrections, for the officers to make security-wise. And, you know, they just got to do what they got to do for their own safety, their own family's safety.
How this protest ends remains to be seen. Will the state sit down and listen? Or will the officers be forced back inside, still demanding change? One thing is certain, the fight isn't over. In Woodburn, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
And a quick break for us, and we'll speak to Mike Martucci. Remember him? He was your former New York State Senator for District 42 here in our listening area. He's got a new job. We'll find out about it next. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting Dierks Bentley with Zach Top and the band Lula, Saturday, August 16th. Tickets on sale Friday. Ticket information at BethelWoodsCenter.org.
On the next Radiolab.
The plane started rotating.
They were going 168 miles an hour.
Whoa.
How a plane crash in Nebraska.
Boom. Everything exploded.
And a team of local doctors.
Neurosurgeons.
Urologists.
EMTs. Nurses.
Gave us the modern ER.
First head.
Neat.
Us Nebraskans are kind of like that.
1, 2, 3.
That's on the next Radiolab. This afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Former New York State Senator Michael Martucci has been tapped as Region 2 Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA Region 2 covers New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, as well as 8 federally recognized Indian nations. Martucci, a Republican from Orange County, served a single term in the New York State Senate from 2021 to 2022, representing the 42nd district in our listening area. He joins the EPA at a time when President Trump has promised cutbacks across federal agencies and has laid out specific goals for the EPA, including promoting the economy and energy production. Martucci will report to former Long Island Congressman Lee Zeldin, who is now running the agency. From the New York Public News Network, WAMC Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Jesse King spoke with Martucci about his objectives as administrator and his first few weeks on the job.
I came here and have been blessed with some of the most intelligent and dedicated career staff. I'm talking about, scientists, engineers, lawyers, folks who do community engagement work on the ground in our communities. And these are people who have been working on some of the biggest environmental issues the region faces for decades. My first piece really has been coming up to speed on a lot of those issues and what they are. But I would tell you that my primary focus, which is a focus that has been laid out by our agency's administrator, also a fellow New Yorker, Lee Zeldin, are focused around the core of our mission, which is ensuring that every American has access to clean air, clean water, and clean land.
What would you say is your position on climate change and humanity's role in it?
Well, so I'll point to two things. I think I just mentioned about Administrator Zeldin, and I don't know if you had the opportunity to check out his congressional hearing, but our administrator spoke to this very issue in his hearing, and the effects that human behavior has had on climate and our planet. And I would tell you that I approach that much in the same fashion. There's no doubt that there are issues that we're dealing with here in our region that are connected to climate change and the effects of climate change. So, as I begin to dig a bit deeper with our team here, our career team, again, the folks I was talking about, our scientists and our engineers, I'm really interested in their plans and ideas that they have, actionable steps that we can take to make this planet a healthier place for all of us.
Well, I'd like to chat a little bit about some specific issues in New York. You know, something that I've been doing a lot of reporting on is PCB contamination in the Hudson River. You know, the EPA recently released its third five-year review of a GE dredging project in the Upper Hudson, and it led to a lot of frustration from environmental advocates here because they want the EPA to declare the dredging not protective of the environment. You know, they say data shows that it's not working, but the latest five-year review of the EPA said it doesn't have enough data. So I guess I'm just wondering, I want to get your thoughts on the situation. Like, what do you view as the disconnect here?
Yeah, so Jesse, as I said, you know, I've really been coming up to speed on a lot of the key issues around the region with the staff, the career staff that are here. And, you know, while I have not had the opportunity to dig deep into this, and I expect to be digging very deep into this issue in the coming weeks, what I do know right now is that EPA at our regional level here is declining a final determination until more review is conducted. I think that perhaps you and I could circle back on this in just a few weeks once I really have an opportunity to understand in greater depth exactly the work that's been done there, the work that potentially is planned there. But right now, what I do know about this is that more data is needed in order for the agency to make a final determination.
New York has moved to eliminate gas stoves and heating in new construction. Do you think this is a good idea?
From my perspective here, and, you know, things that you've been seeing our administrator talk a little bit about, you know, I'll say overall is that, you know, one of the things that we're focused on doing here is being protective of the environment and at the same time acknowledging some economic pain that people are feeling right now. While you can talk about specific state mandates and what those mandates mean, you know, from our perspective, protecting our environment and making life easier and more affordable for people that live in the region are not mutually exclusive. And, you know, I think that the approach that I'm looking to take is to be informed on the science and at the same time, pay attention to the economics of things that are happening right now and acknowledge that, you know, every single person driving an electric car is just economically infeasible. Folks can't afford that, right? That's not something that's affordable right now for the average everyday New Yorker or person who lives in New Jersey or any part of this region for that matter. So really what it comes down to is balance. And I think that in the coming weeks, as our administrator really becomes seated in the agency, you're going to see some more priorities come down as it relates to this balance. And those are things that I'm looking to employ here in the region. But what I do want to say, while balance is important, the mission of the EPA, of this agency, remains unchanged. And that is to protect the environment and protect human health. And I'm looking forward to doing my part to make sure that mission is fulfilled, again, in a way that just simply doesn't bankrupt people.
Well, on that note about balance, you know, the president has said he wants to promote energy production, including fracking across the U.S. You know, how do you reconcile that with laws in New York where fracking is banned?
Well, so, I mean, yeah, you speak about New York and, you know, the state has its fracking ban, which is currently the law in New York. Jesse, I don't know. I can't sort of speak to how a changes in federal policy, whatever they will be, will impact individual states. And I don't want to speculate on that either. You know, but what I will say is that the president has been very clear about the fact that energy production and domestic energy production is important, right? So I know that will be a focus of this administration and this agency. You know, another priority that's been spelled out very clearly by our administrator is his emphasis on cooperative federalism, right? And ensuring that states have, you know, their role and we work cooperatively with states. So I think that in places like New York and New Jersey, there will be times when the federal administration's priorities conflict with state priorities. I don't know exactly how that spells out right now. But what I will also say is that, you know, from an agency perspective and from my perspective in relation to state partners, even when we have disagreements on policy, the things I have done in the first couple of weeks that I've been here is connected with the state DEC commissioners in both of the states, well, DEC in New York and DEP in New Jersey. And have connected with those commissioners and expressed that we want to work alongside of them and with them cooperatively throughout this administration, because the challenges that we face in terms of protecting human health and the environment can't just be done by the staff here in Region 2. We need our state partners and our local partners. So, you know, I think that has also been one of the priorities that I've laid out in the first 2 weeks is be clear that while there might be policy differences in the future, what that doesn't mean is that we're not going to work cooperatively when it comes to our core mission.
I know you're just in your first weeks on the job here, but, you know, in these first 2 weeks, what are some specific locations maybe with air and water pollution that have caught your eye that you want to hone in on?
Well, I think that, you know, from the two highest levels, you know, I've been briefed by our air division. And as you probably are aware, you know, one of our big focuses are areas, what we call areas of non-attainment, you know, areas that don't meet air quality standards. You know, I want to see a region where every single person in this region is breathing air that meets our air quality standards. So my laser focus is going to be in places right now that we're not reaching attainment, right? Those are going to be our priority areas that we focus on. And we've got some of them here, not only sort of in the northern part of the region. When I say that, what I mean is in New York and New Jersey, but also in places like Puerto Rico, where we have non-attainment areas. So that would be, I guess, my, you know, succinctly on the air front, we're going to look at those non-attainment areas. Certainly on the waterfront, as you speak about those, it tees right into some of the Superfund sites that you talked about, right? So we have several large Superfund sites in the region that are directly connected to water quality. And lastly and finally, on the clean land front, we have a team here in a division that's focusing, again, this sort of falls under Superfund, but also under a very important program, which is a brownfields program that is centered in economic development. You know, you call a place like Newburgh home, you know that even, you know, communities like yours have brownfield sites. And I look forward to prioritizing those sites. A lot of these are former industrial sites that, you know, can be repurposed and reused in a good economic way. We're fixing community blights and we're creating opportunities in places that I think will benefit from them in a tremendous way. You know, the other piece, Jesse, again, is like, I've been here 2.5 weeks, but what I'm super excited to do is get out on the road and spend some time in these communities, connecting on the ground and finding these opportunities in connection with our local partners. And I'm talking about going out and meeting small city mayors. I'm talking about going out and meeting with county and local representatives, some of my former colleagues in the state legislature in New York and new folks who I'll meet in New Jersey, to try to identify these places and communities, because that's the kind of work that I'm most interested in doing.
Lastly, the president has said that he wants to cut spending at the EPA and most federal agencies, really. How do you see that impacting your staff and your role as Region 2 administrator?
Well, look, so there's two pieces to this, right? So as you know, the administration has undertaken a deep dive and deep review of many of the contracts and grants that are currently held by the agency. You know, certainly that is something that's been a priority in terms of the new administration wrapping its hands around spending and making sure that every single tax dollar that's a hard-earned tax dollar by an American that's provided to this agency is used in a responsible way. So there's that undertaking that's taking place right now. The other piece, which I'm sure that you are well aware of because it's widely reported in the news, is that the president has issued a number of directives concerning the federal workforce. You know, among them are things like returning to the office policies for federal workers, restoring accountability for employees who have decision-making authority, and also potential proposed cuts. Now, at my level, I don't know exactly what that means, but what I would say is, you know, my focus is going to be to ensure that we stay completely focused to and committed to our core mission and those founding, the statutory requirements of this agency and sort of, you know, the founding principles here, which, again, is making sure that every American has clean air, clean land, and clean water. And I look forward to doing that. I'm excited to be part of a team that gets to do that.
And thanks to the New York Public News Network and WAMC's Jesse King for that report, speaking to former New York State Senator Mike Martucci, who's now the Region 2 Administrator for the EPA. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll meet singer-songwriter Kate Prasher. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on This American Life, not long ago, Zach's father called to warn him that the country's power grid was about to be wiped out.
I know it sounds like conspiracy theory, but...
He believes a lot of conspiracy theories. Zach has trouble getting him to see the facts. And then they figured out a way to settle their arguments once and for all. See eye to eye. Have a shared reality. That's this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're going to meet Kate Prasher. I'm going to read a little bit from her bio. Kate Prasher doesn't want you to look at her. She wants you to see what she sees. She wants you to know if you see it too. Her songs say the things that don't make it into polite conversation. Kate Prasher is performing at The Colony in Woodstock on Thursday, sharing the bill with fellow singer-songwriter Jenna Nichols. And let's listen to a little bit of her music. This is Roving Rounder from Kate's latest album, Shake the Dust. Prasher, like Thrasher, joins us now. Good morning, Kate. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine, except sorry for the struggles with your name this morning. I don't know what's wrong with
me. No worries.
You're certainly not struggling with your sound. Your music has been described as having a, quote, intangible vintage feel. Is that how you would describe it and the emotional connection you hope to create with listeners, or how do you describe it?
Well, I definitely have a background. I studied bluegrass music for a long time, so I have a very deep connection to older music and music that is comes from a tradition. But it is sort of my aim to kind of push things forward a little bit, to bring in other influences, things I love like pop music and modern country music and all that stuff. So there's a lot that's swirling around in my sound, mostly just things I love and things that bring me joy.
As I mentioned in the introduction, this quote from your bio, that your songs often explore themes that, quote, don't make it into polite conversation. Can you talk a little bit about why you might choose to address these darker, maybe more complex aspects of life in your music?
Sure. So I'm from the South, and I think sort of we have a reputation as being very polite and very socially conscious. And I think that, you know, I also in my music, I want to recognize that I think in every region, in every society, in every relationship, there are darker themes. And I think music is a wonderful place to put it, because there's always two lines of narrative. You get the music, the actual like tones and beat that you're hearing. And then you also get the words, and those things can either match and give you a story, or they can be dissonant and also give you a different story. And I think it kind of frees you up with those two sort of narrative lines running to say more than one thing, to get to the light and the dark at the same time.
You're originally, you mentioned, from the South, from Tennessee, now living in the Hudson Valley here in New York. Has that move north to the Hudson Valley here influenced your songwriting? And do you notice any difference in your creative process compared to the Tennessee roots you talk about?
I love living up north, and I live right under a mountain now. And I think that, you know, really is inspiring. I don't know what it is about living next to these big sort of old rocks that have been here forever, but it's grounding in a way, and also kind of holds the people that live there in a certain way. And I don't know, since I've moved up here, I've really felt like a flowering of ideas, and I really love the music community up here. So both of those things have really, I think, influenced the way that I'm writing.
Real connection to the land, the earth, the environment where you are. Your latest album, Shake the Dust, was released last year. How do you describe that sound on Shake the Dust, and does it differ from your past work at all?
It does. I think my past work, my EP, was more bluegrass based. And Shake the Dust definitely has that. The first song that you played, Roving Rounder, that's a straight ahead bluegrass number for sure. But the whole record sort of explores different types of music, different types of influences. There's certainly bluegrass, as mentioned, but there's also like old country feel. There's a song that's a blues. There's a song that almost goes towards like New Orleans style jazz. So there's lots of different things happening. Again, things that interest me and make me excited about playing music.
And there's a theme in Shake the Dust that revolves around exploring memory and then that darkness, that complex aspect of things of life and relationships too. What inspired that theme for this album, and how did it shape the songwriting process for you for this one?
Well, I think I would say roughly half of the songs came out of COVID, and all of the arrangements certainly did. I think we all had to sit with the things that were inside of us during that time. and we all dealt with that in various ways. And one of the ways that I dealt with it was to create, you know, music and to say things about what I was seeing and what I was feeling. One or two of those threads were kind of dark. And I think that in that way, it resonates with people because we all felt that at the time, and we feel that at different times in our lives.
Well, yeah, and you also mentioned that you want your listener to see what you see through your songs, and we've all sort of had this shared experience with that particular event. How does that desire for this shared vision influence the way you write and even perform your music?
Well, I think, you know, listening to really good writing teachers and performers, the more specific that you are about what you experience, the more you allow the people who are listening or paying attention into the experience itself. So I try to be extremely specific, extremely detailed, but also kind of vacillate between the small and granular and also the larger themes. But the small and granular kind of allows people, that opens the door so that people can walk through.
Can you give us an example of one of those small granular moments or other specific moments that fuel your creativity?
I've been writing a song this week. It's not on the record. It's not going to be on the next record. It'll be on the following record whenever that gets made. I was talking to somebody about a gig, and they were like, we need some earth or some garden songs. And I was like, I got you. So I wrote a song this week. And one of the lines is, it has gardens and it has summer imagery in it. But there's a line that says, the work of a lifetime comes down to moments. In summer, the rain clouds hover like omens. So, you know, just that, with that little line, you know, we've all seen thunderclouds before, and felt that sort of feeling of something bad's about to happen, or something big anyway. And I think that it's sort of, I don't claim to be a poet, but it's sort of like the moves that poets make to make us look at something that is familiar and see it in a different way, or understand it in a way you didn't before.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to singer-songwriter Kate Prasher. She's performing at The Colony in Woodstock, New York, this Thursday, tomorrow, sharing the bill with fellow singer-songwriter Jenna Nichols. Kate, you've been compared to a few folks. Some folks have thrown out the names Hazel Dickens and Gillian Welch. How do you view comparisons like that? And how does that influence, you know, that influence on you carry into your work, if at all?
Oh my gosh. I mean, those two people those two songwriters are people that I am thrilled to be compared to. Hazel Dickens, she, you know, just this sort of like raw, I don't know how she was personally. I never met her, but just this raw nerve. Of like, her sound is raw, the things that she addressed, the suffering that she saw around her in West Virginia, and like in the union work that she did, to be compared to her and that just like heartbreak sound is like deeply, deeply flattering. And also Gillian Welch is like, she is the be all end all for me. I got into playing this kind of music partly just because I loved her and her music and her songwriting and her ability to deal with dark themes in clever ways. Like, I love her so much. So again, like, somebody that I'm just thrilled to be compared to.
And just wondering, you know, talking about that, those themes and the vulnerability and the strength in your music, how do you navigate that balance between creating some songs that are, you know, vulnerable and exposing some part of you, raw, you know, emotion, but still maintaining a sense of, you know, hopefulness and resolution, and those kinds of things.
You know, it's really interesting because you look at different songwriters and everybody has a different way into songwriting. So I know some just amazing, like, peers of mine whose songwriting is really based on exposing themselves and their own experiences, like very verbally and very clearly. And I think that that's maybe not my way. I'm more interested in the tension between what is revealed and what is concealed. I think I find that more fascinating in songs. But then there's also songwriters who are extreme, like their songwriting process is based on like listening to sounds or listening to beats, and they come in, the words are like secondary. And it's really interesting to see all of those different ways into the process. But in terms of hopefulness, I mean, I think if we can all be real and be honest, then the hope comes from that.
Mm-hmm. And is that what you hope folks take away from listening to your work, especially for those who might just be discovering it?
You know, it's really hard. Once you put something out there, it doesn't really belong to you so much anymore.
Let the child go and grow up. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard thing. People are going to take what they take. I hope that it's, you know, I hope that it's close to my intention, which is honesty and which is interest in the world and, you know, respect for humanity. I hope they grab onto those things, but I'm sure they'll find other things that are there that I missed.
And as we mentioned, you're playing tomorrow at the Colony in Woodstock with Jenna Nichols. We're going to talk to Jenna tomorrow, actually. But anything awesome else you're excited about coming up, projects or other tour dates that are coming up that you want to let folks know about?
My tour dates are mostly going to be in the spring and the summer, and a lot of those aren't confirmed yet, but keep you on the lookout. I've got a second record that's in the works. It's not 100% confirmed when it's coming out, or even it doesn't have a title yet, but it's in the works. It's very close, and it will hopefully be out this year in 2025.
All right. Kate Prasher is performing at the Colony Woodstock tomorrow. There's more information at colonywoodstock.com. More information about Kate at her website, kateprasher.com, PRASCHER. Thank you so much, Kate. Have a great time tomorrow. And you know what? We're going to leave listeners with a little bit more of your music, Heart Like a Cage from Shake the Dust. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kate Prasher, Heart Like a Cage from her album Shake the Dust. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, more music, but this time we're going to combine it with a little science and the human brain. We'll find out more. We'll tell you more right after this. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll visit Tiki Gardens on Florida's West Coast. Also, the exotic sounds of the Hilo High Flyers and Arthur Lyman. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Coming up tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill.
For the next Jazz Night in America, we revisit Miles Davis's Electric Period. Groundbreaking, controversial, and now classic. With bassist Marcus Miller on stage at Jazz and Lincoln Center.
If we're going to do a tribute to Miles, we're probably going to have to deal with that nasty electric period of his. So I'm like the resident rebel for Lincoln Center, which I enjoy.
That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Join me Sunday at 8 here on Radio Catskill.
Thanks for listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, legendary filmmaker Werner Herzog's latest project is called Theater of Thought. It's an ambitious exploration of the inner workings of the human brain. Herzog takes his lens to neuroscience, delving into the complexities of thought and consciousness. Theater of Thought will be screened tomorrow at the Calicoon Theater, and there's a local connection. It was partially filmed in Keshecton, New York, and features music from neuroscientist and musician Joseph Ledoux and his band Amygdaloids. Did I say it right?
Amygdaloids.
Adding a really unique layer to the soundtrack. Joseph Ledoux joins us now, along with Colin Dempsey, fellow musician. Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
Well, thank you for being here, and tell us, Joseph, how did this all come about? I'm talking about legendary filmmaker Werner Herzog and this film. Walk us through how this collaboration came about.
Well, I was in my house up in Keshecton, Fosterdale, a couple of summers ago, and I got a phone call on Saturday night about 8 p.m. This neuroscientist that I knew just said, would you have time to meet with Werner Herzog on Monday to talk about his new film? I said, sure, but I'm upstate. I'm not in New York. They said, no problem. So they drove up in a rental car on Monday afternoon, arrived around 2 p.m. right on target. They walked in, started unpacking, and he started asking questions. I knew he wanted me to play guitar. So while they were setting up, he said, play some songs. And so I started playing a couple of songs. And when I got to... It's called Map of Your Mind, and all my songs are about mind and brain, and this one's about how you get into the head of the other person, like in a relationship, so Map of Your Mind. And he loved that song, and so he put that one in the middle of the film, and then he used another one over Philippe Petrit, the tightrope walker mm-hmm. between the World Trade Centers.
Yeah.
He put another song called When the Night is Dark over his exercises about it. It fit perfectly. And then there's another one called All in a Nut about the amygdala, the part of the brain I work in, that's in the credits. So I have three of my songs in the Werner Herzog movie.
Which is amazing. But let's also remind folks again that maybe I passed over this a little bit. You're a neuroscientist.
Yes.
We may pick up on the musician part when you're playing the guitar and everything, but talk about your work and your research, and that's why partially he called you.
Yes, of course. I'm pretty much retired now, but I spent 50 years or so studying the brain, often about consciousness, and if not about consciousness, then about fear as a conscious experience. I help put the idea of the amygdala on the map. That was not something in the public's imagination. And it's something I regret, because the idea that the amygdala is a fear center, it was populated in part because of a book I wrote in 1996 called The Emotional Brain. But my views changed over the years, and I felt that was wrong. The amygdala is not a fear center. What it does is it detects and responds to danger. Fear is the subjective experience, your conscious awareness of the situation that you find yourself. And that is a cognitive process, not an emotional one.
How did your thinking change?
Well, I kept seeing research coming out, including my research, saying we're going to solve the problem of fear and anxiety for people by studying rats and their behavior. And it just eventually dawned on me, there's no way to understand the human mind and human anxiety, fear and anxiety, by changing the freezing behavior of a rat. You know, we freeze too, but the freezing and things like that controlled by the amygdala are not what the fear is. The fear is your understanding that all of that is happening to you.
Can you talk a little bit about how your aspects of your life as a musician and a neuroscience, complement or contrast each other?
Well, they've become so entwined that it's impossible to separate them in a way. We formed the amygdaloids in 2006. Colin wasn't with us back then, but he's been with us about half of the time. It became this big deal. We ended up playing at NYU's graduation in Madison Square Garden. That was a thrill. The Kennedy Center. We played at a place in New York called the Cornelia Street Cafe, where John Nash of A Beautiful Mind was in the audience, and the New York Times was there. And the New York Times asked John Nash, what did he think of the music? It's all about mind and brain, and he's got a problem. He said, oh, it's psychoanalytic. And that article was that came out as an article in the New York Times called A Band of Scientists Who Really Are a Band. And that was the beginning. NYU picked up on it. Their PR people started advertising us all the time. I get invited to give lectures all around the world about my research, and they ask me to bring the amygdaloids almost every time. I said no, but I can bring Colin.
You travel well.
we've been to Mexico City, Rio de Janeiro, Stockholm, you name it, Rome.
Colin, how did you hook up with Joe and the amygdaloids?
I play in an indie rock duo called Super Small, mm-hmm. and it's me and my musical partner, Daniela Schiller, who's also a neuroscientist, and she was a student of...
You just come a little closer.
Oh, so I play in a band called Super Small, and my musical partner is Daniela Schiller, who's a neuroscientist, and she was a student of Joe LeDuc.
And the drummer of the amygdaloids.
And also drummer of the amygdaloids. So it's a little crossover.
There is a neuroscience connection there, too, for you.
Yeah, I'm an engineer. Like, my background is engineering, so I'm not in that world, thank God. So.
Thank God.
I get to enjoy the fruits, but I have to put in the years of hard work. So.
I want to ask you back to the film, the documentary here from Werner Herzog. You were interviewed by him in this, right? And how was that? What was that
like? Wonderful. I mean, his first question to me was, so your father rode bulls, which is true. I grew up in Louisiana. My father was a bull riding kid in the Depression. He ran away with the rodeo just like you'd run away with the circus. Rode bulls for a long time. And then he was 60 years old. He started riding bulls again. And Werner was fascinated with that. And my mother threatened to divorce him because he'd come back with his back broken all the time. And so he ended up instead being the wagon master of the Louisiana wagon train for the bicentennial. So he liked that whole backstory. And there's this other part of the film that came out that all of the people in my family on my father's side have crooked fingers, little fingers, pinkies. They go the wrong way.
He's holding up his fingers, and when you hold up your two pinkies together, I've got mine, they're straight, but yours are curved off to either side.
And it's terrible for playing guitar. I can't reach anything.
but naturally, you became a musician.
But Werner asked me something. What's a characteristic of your family? And I did that. Uh-huh. And I told him my son was upstairs. I would show him. So my son came down. He took a picture, and it's in the film of me and Milo with our pinkies. So he just asked me a lot of things. It was just random all over the place about life. And, he asked me what I was afraid of and do I have any deep, dark secrets. And
Was that at your house here?
Yeah, it was in
He came here to interview you. Yeah. What was that like? Like having this done at your home?
We talked for 2.5 hours. He said we're done. And then Milo and his wife, Anna, had prepared a reception outside. So we went and sat on the deck for 1.5 hours looking at the sunset. How amazing is that?
Was that one of the highlights of this, or were there any parts of this experience that surprised you or left an impression on you?
Yeah, just the surprise is that it actually came out because this was, it was in festivals like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And nothing was really – it wasn't really taking off. And then all of a sudden he decided to release it commercially. So that was a big surprise, but it was so much fun talking to him. I even had his email for a while.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Joseph LeDuc and Colin Dempsey. Joseph and Colin, well, Colin with the amygdaloids.
Amygdaloids.
With that band, are you featured in this? In the
no, I unfortunately well? I was meant to, but the day before he asked me if I'd been vaccinated, and I didn't. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm just very lazy, and. I live in a cabin with my wife and two cats, and we're in the woods, and we don't see people for weeks on end, so I didn't feel the need to get them. So
there was no pressure.
I regret it now. I deeply regret it now.
Well, so. The music is in the film Theater of Thought, which is being screened at the Calicoon Theater tomorrow. We're going to hear a little bit of your...
7 p.m. tomorrow.
7 p.m. tomorrow. We'll hear a little bit of your music, but first I want to ask you about some of the songs in the film. There's three songs on the soundtrack. Can you describe a little bit about those
there's
songs?
There's like
portions.
Ambient music,
yeah.
too, but my three songs were...
You mentioned one of them.
So Map of Your Mind. It's a love song about mind and brain. All my love songs are really love songs about mind and brain, and some about mental disorders too. So that's about getting into the mind of the other person. Then there's When the Night is Dark, which is about someone who's afraid of the day rather than the dark. It's an interesting song. And then one is All in a Nut about the amygdala, which I never play anymore because it goes against my current view of the amygdala.
Right, right. But what's the connection you see between the brain and music then, and the emotional centers of ourselves and what you perform?
There's nothing like music to trigger memories.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm writing a memoir now, and the way I trigger memories, I go back to the Billboard hits of the day when I was a young kid, all the way through high school and college. And I go through the hits, and a song will pop up as a name, and I go, oh my God, I was in the gym looking at that girl that day, whatever. and then when you listen to them, they're really powerful triggers of emotion.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hear some of your music.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Joseph Ledoux and Colin Dempsey. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, we wonder about the secrets of nature and meet the scientists finding the keys to the universe, like black hole maven Jan 11.
I think it's really important as a scientist not to put a belief system first. The whole point is to explore the unknown.
Come explore with us. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Fridays, 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And why wait until Friday? We've got some science and some music today with Joseph Ledoux and Colin Dempsey of the Amygdaloids. They're going to be performing after the screening of Theater of Thought tomorrow at the Calicoon Theater. That's the Werner Herzog movie that is exploring the inner workings of the human brain. Joseph's songs are featured on the soundtrack. And there's also going to be a talk back with our own Jason Tugaw, host of The Mixtape here, Fridays at 7. So a great, wonderful event happening tomorrow at the Calicoon Theater starting at 7. You guys want to play a little bit of your music to give folks a taste of what it's all about?
Yeah, so we're going to play a song, start with a song called My Mind's Eye.
If you look into my mind's eye, you would see the way that I cry deep inside, in my mind's eye. We had love, it was good. You were there, you understood everything, yes, everything. You can't always trust what you think you know. You can't trust what you believe. But sometimes your mind just puts on a show. It simply deceives. In my mind's eye, you were blind, but in my mind's eye was mine. If you look into my mind's eye, you would see the way that I cry deep inside, in my mind's eye. You can't always trust what you think you know. You can't trust what you believe. But sometimes your mind just puts on a show. It simply deceives. Thank you. my mind's eye, you were mine. But in my mind's eye was blind. My mind's eye was blind. My mind's eye was blind. Whoa, yeah. My mind's eye was blind.
That is Joseph Ledoux and Colin Dempsey of the Amygdaloids playing some of their music. And it's going to be featured. It is featured in the Theater of Thought film, which is screening tomorrow at the Calicoon Theater. What do you hope folks take away from this film, your music and, you know, the talk back tomorrow? What do you think they could learn?
Well, you know, it's as a scientist, you always want to get your material out to the public, and I have music as a kind of way to draw people into the science, you know, because all of the songs are either based on my research or on other people's research or philosophical ideas and so forth. So it's a way to kind of have both science and the fun part involved. Yeah. And these days we need as much science as we can.
And as much fun, too. let's listen to one more before we go. Again, it's a screening tomorrow, Theater of Thought at Calicoon Theater. 7 o'clock, a live talk back with Joseph Ledoux, moderated by our very own Jason Tugara, host of The Mixtape here Fridays at 7. And then Colin and Joseph also performing some of the music tomorrow as well. More information at calicoontheater.com. Let you guys take it away.
When the night is dark, I lose my fear. When the night is dark, never shed a tear. Then the daylight comes, it scares me awake. When the daylight comes, it's when I have to fake. When the night is dark,
night is dark,
I feel so free.
Feel so free.
Night is dark,
night is dark,
I feel at peace.
When
the daylight comes, it scares me awake. When the daylight comes, it's when I have to fake. When the night is dark,
night is dark,
I come alive,
I come alive.
When the night is dark,
the night is dark,
I feel I thrive. When the daylight comes, it scares me awake. When the daylight comes, it's when I have to fake. When the daylight comes, it scares me awake. When the daylight comes, it's when I have to fake.
Joseph Ledoux and Colin Dempsey, thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, SullivanCatskills.com, Catskill Brewery, brewing ales, lagers, and mixed fermentation beers in a LEED Gold certified building, plus a food truck and beer garden at Exit 96 off Route 17 in Livingston Manor, CatskillBrewery.com, and listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, episode 2 of our new series, Hombre, Understanding Latino Men. We hear from two Latino voters with opposite political views on what informed their votes.
We are all different in our own manners, right? Mexican Americans are going to be so much more different than Cuban American.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. The forecast today, sun, continued cold, high of 20. Tonight, going down to 4 degrees. The cold temperatures continue tomorrow, 20 for the high, low of 10. Cloudy, windy, cold Friday, a high of 23, a low of 8. But for Saturday, not as chilly, partly sunny. High of 32, looking for a high of 33 on Sunday. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.